Freight Efficiency with NACFI's Mike Roth and Friends.
Here on episode number 5, I am joined by Ned Harvey, Managing Director at the Rocky Mountain Institute, where he talks about the work of RMI in securing a cleaner future, the trucking industry's role in that cleaner future, what's meant by a climate-constrained world, the future of goods movement in such a climate-constrained world, as well as the overall coolness of trucking. Today we have joining me Ned Harvey of the Rocky Mountain Institute. We've been friends for a bit over 10 years, Ned. I think, just as NACFI was getting started out of a Rocky Mountain Institute workshop. So it's good to have you on. Hello.
Good to be here, Mike. 10 years, been a long time. But you and NACFI are one of my favorite things I get to do.
Well, that'll help. Any compliments are expected here. So, a lot of our listeners may not be so familiar with Rocky Mountain Institute. So if you don't mind, give us a little bit of history of the organization and then kind of how you joined it and how's your career evolved there at RMI?
Sure. So Rocky Mountain Institute is a nonprofit organization based in Colorado. We're about 40 years old, and we have a mission to transform global energy use to create a clean, prosperous, and secure low-carbon future for everybody, which is very nonprofit-y. But essentially, we are engaged with some of the biggest players in the world that contribute to our global economy and are working with them to understand. You know, it started in energy. How do you use energy? How do you use energy more efficiently? How do you make sure you're using clean, sustainable energy? And over the last several years, it's transitioned to, you know, as much of a climate conversation as about energy, because, of course, energy is at the heart of most of climate challenges. And I joined RMI just before you and I met. Actually, it was almost concurrent. And I basically was on a career journey at the time. I had quit my old job without another job, which is, by the way, a terrible thing to do. And I had gone on a sort of journey in the energy and clean energy space and had started my own company that was foundering along and found RMI just about the time the economy was turning down. So realized it was probably better to have a job than not. So came to RMI. And have been really passionately engaged and excited ever since, and have done a number of different jobs, ranging from the chief operating officer when I started to working on our solar program, to being involved in development and fundraising, and then most recently, long after you and I first met and got involved in trucking, but most recently overseeing our work with industry. And even that's changing now. So happy to talk about all that.
Yeah, so with industry, and, you know, real change, of course, is going to happen at the business level, right? I mean, that's how things happen. And, you know, we many times in nonprofits sort of think we're the tail wagging the dog, but really it's the business actions that take place. And, you know, there's this term out there called hard to abate industries. And I've always kind of been somewhat taken aback by that, but also interested in it. So, yeah, you trucking was part of the industry group at RMI that you've led. What'd you learn maybe in those industry segments with respect to what RMI is trying to accomplish here?
Yeah, well, I think this is the most important question to ask right now when you're thinking about changing the world, whether it's climate or health or whatever, which is, you know, we don't have these problems because we want them. We don't have these problems because they're optional. We have the problems around climate and health because the economy that we need to sustain human prosperity and all of mankind, and by the way, it's not done, right? There's still a lot of people that are underserved and unjust, but it's the economy that makes it all work, and the economy exists for the betterment of humans. So when you go into the economy and figure out, you know, what's good and bad about the economy, you end up dealing with businesses and companies and frankly politicians and financial institutions, all that work them, but it's what I call the real economy that matters, and that's where in the climate world, that's where emissions are coming from. And for years and years and years, you know, we've been working on climate and made some progress in electricity and made some progress in maybe at the margin on how people are using cars, but we won't make real change until we deal with the way business works. And frankly, what I learned in the, in, you know, I, I kind of had a sense of this going in, but what I learned is that the emissions that are causing the climate plan are ingrained in the way these businesses operate. You can't be an efficient mover of goods in the United States or anywhere in the world right now, today, if you're not using oil and you're not making carbon emissions. And so to talk about decarbonization, you have to talk about a fundamental change in freight movement or trucking. And people don't make fundamental changes because you tell them to. They make fundamental changes because it's the right thing for them to do in their world. And so, you know, I came at this from a business perspective. I'm a businessman at heart. It's almost embarrassing to say, in some ways I'm an American at heart. I believe in the power of capitalism and industry. So I understand, like, and I'm empathetic to how it works, but I also know we got to drive some change.
So it's kind of at the root of how the problem was created, right? With this economy being, you know, driven by energy, right? So more people, a higher level of living is more stuff. You need to manufacture it. You need to move it to the consumer. And, you know, as that's just grown and grown and grown, it's come at the expense of the climate. So that's where we got to fix it, so to speak. Is that kind of the way you think about it?
That's exactly it. In the academics or the economists call these all externalities, right? That they're common problems that ultimately are not paid for very well by capitalism. And there's all, you know, there's all kinds of theories on it, but forget the theories, right? You know, these problems now are affecting all of us, and they're affecting all of us in different ways. And so we have to rethink the approaches we use. And that's what I'm passionate about working on. And frankly, when I think about our work together and the conversations we've had in trucking and with the NACFI members and NACFI board members, I think it's just amazing to see how hard they are working to deal with this and how hard the problem is. And so I'm focused on bridging that gap.
Yeah, it's a really exciting time. I mean, you can't look at the trucking industry or transportation right now without seeing, you know, transformational, you know, technologies and practices and things. A lot of it's rooted in exactly what we're talking about here. And, you know, I think NACFI, North American Council for Freight Efficiency, I mean, we clearly saw all this coming, and that's why there's this partnership between Rocky Mountain Institute and NACFI, because, you know, NACFI, and sometimes I joke about it, or it's really very serious, that, you know, the team working on, you know, more efficient trucks, trucks that, you know, could be more sustainable in their operation, electric, hydrogen, all that kind of thing, that the group working on that really has two parents here. We've got the NACFI board of directors, who are the trucking, you know, insiders, whether they're fleets and manufacturers and others. And then, you know, we've got the Rocky Mountain Institute kind of parent that's thinking about, you know, the nonprofit thoughts around how to move this industry for long-term sustainability. So, you know, that's really cool. And that sort of shows up in our work all the time. Can you add a little bit to that for our listeners around, you know, why that, you know, we feel that's important going forward? Some of it's like short-term, long-term in a way, isn't it?
Yeah. Oh, essentially, use that analogy all the time, and I love it. Although I don't feel like a parent, I've already got enough challenges with my own kids. So, but I think that what you saw early on, you know, after we'd started and launched NACFI and you'd been up and running for a while, was that there was a tension, you know, a bit of a. You know, at first, I think it was maybe a conflict-oriented tension between companies that are trying to, you know, make money and NGOs that are trying to change them. And you wanted to make sure you were helping the industry at that point of conflict. But actually, in the last several years, I think we've seen, whether it's in trucking and other industries, that it's even not as much a point of conflict anymore, because the actual awareness of the challenge and the manifestation of the problems of the challenge are showing up within the industry itself, from their customers, from their bankers. And so it's no longer one parent that wants to do bad and one parent that wants to do good. It's actually the trucking parent is coming to terms with some real challenges. And, you know, the RMI parent is trying to help. Not lecture or dictate or whatever, but to say, here's what we've learned, here's what we know, here's the insights we can bring, And, you know, we're happy to work with you to figure out how you need to innovate, whether it's on technologies in terms of new drivetrains for your trucks, or frankly on business models and whether you should be, you know, using trucks at all or moving more into additive manufacturing or whatever they are. These are the kinds of things strategic leaders are thinking about right now.
Yeah, I think so. One of the ways that's kind of showing up is in the policy environment. You know, trucking's got a lot of regulations just by the nature of how it moves good on public highways. And, you know, the greenhouse gas rule is here. And, you know, for the most part, you know, all stakeholders are, you know, not all supportive, but, you know, they're pretty much, let's get on with it. You know, let's build these more efficient trucks. And, you know, even within that rule, it recognizes advanced technologies and electric trucks in the calculation. So that's sort of enough folks in to move this forward. Can you help us, Ned? You know, I hear all the time about, you know, 2 degrees C and 1.5 degrees C, and that we've got so much time on the, you know, with the, you know, climate, and so forth. Can you just give us, you know, maybe your assessment or Rocky Mountain Institute's assessment of where are we? How much time do we have? What kind of, how important is transportation and trucking in the whole mix? And probably we could spend, you know, an hour on it, but just kind of a high level for some that might be interested.
Yeah. Well, I mean, this is definitely a long and complicated topic, but one that's overly long and complicated. So, you know, in reality, when you're looking out in the future, whether it's relative to climate or financial markets or whatever, it's an unknown. People want some sense of certainty to plan against the future. And the problem with climate is that, one, it's an inexact science. It's actually, you know, it's not weather, but it's a lot like weather. We can accurately predict the weather pretty well, but we don't always get it right. We don't always get it right at the right time in the right place we thought it was. So it's the same, but it's also been politicized. And so the combination of those two facts, I think, make it much easier for the ambiguity and the lack of precision to actually stymie certainty or confidence. So what I would say is, and I think this is something actually you've worked on it for a long time at NACFI in terms of the technology roadmaps, but when it comes to climate, to put it most simply, I would say every company in the world today is making a bet on whether they will or will not be impacted by climate change. I'm not talking about floods and hurricanes. I'm talking about anything, like whether it's unexpected policy changes, maybe drought because of climate or floods because of climate. Maybe it's your banks. It's saying, look, we're only putting money into assets that are climate aligned or carbon friendly. And you can kill yourself trying to get certainty on that. And so what I'm encouraging companies to do is to back up and say, look, if there's any question about how important climate is in your future, there's a problem. People should just understand we're going to be impacted by climate, and I need to make sure that I have the best strategy to protect myself in that world, to protect myself from unexpected policy change, protect myself from changes in customer demand, to protect myself from what my bank's telling me, and to protect myself from actual climate change. And once you make that decision and say, now I got to have a strategy that protects me, then you can start figuring out what to do. Until you do that, though, you're going to be stuck in indecision and probably inaction, which no matter what is going to put you at a disadvantage to other companies or your even competitors coming from out of the fringe that are going to, you know, be positioned to eat your lunch.
Right. So in specific then to trucking, and we may come back up a level here in a minute, but specific to trucking, then, you know, we know that burning fossil fuels in these trucks and trucks that are doing, you know, 100,000 plus miles a year, you know, that's a lot of fuel, a lot of emissions. We know that that's damaging. So what you're saying is to mitigate that, having business actions to burn less fuel, to move those miles, to move that freight, to have less miles involved in that, to get your routing down better and to do all that correctly. And then ultimately, or not ultimately, but also look at alternatives that have a lesser effect on the environment, even to and including, you know, no tailpipe emissions with, say, electric or hydrogen. So are those the kind of actions? I mean, obviously, you know, businesses, companies in transportation trucking have a lot of other corporate responsibility to think about other than this one, but for this one.
Yeah. No, I think you're exactly right on. I wish I had I probably should by now after 10 years have just, a white paper I can hand out and say, here's how you figure it out. But I think that what if you put yourself in the seat of a chair of a board or of a CEO, you kind of have to say, okay, what can I do right now to make myself more competitive in a climate constrained world? What can I do in the near term? And, what are the long-term implications? And I think right now, one should focus on one, what would be climate reducing activities, but where can I get multiple bangs for the buck on those investments? So, we've talked a lot in our conversation talking about driver retention or the costs associated with operating a fleet and all that stuff. Well, you look at, driver training, and driver experience, you probably can get a lot and demonstrably get a lot of climate benefit out of driver training, but you can also create a better, attractive proposition for new hires and longer retention. I think when we think about electrification and maybe experimenting and investing in innovation, if you spend a little time in that space, you realize, maybe the way this whole thing is evolving, my ability to kind of, interact with the local electricity grid and to provide services to the utility that would otherwise be provided by stationary batteries or, all kinds of complicated policy metrics, maybe that's a source of revenue that could offset the costs, or different relationships with my customers that allow me to do this stuff. So I think the key thing is to put climate in your risk matrix, put climate metrics in your measures, and then seek solutions that simultaneously maximize the benefit to climate with your own competitiveness and profitability. And you're at least moving in the right direction in the near and medium term. Long term, again, that's still probably early stage right now, but I think, thinking about what freight movement looks like in a climate constrained world, what freight movement looks like when cities are, really, really in the process of trying to solve a really tough problem to move and get people around a massive urban area without pollution and all that stuff. I think those are probably the kind of design parameters you want to have in designing your long-term strategy.
Yeah, and I totally agree with you that there can be, it's like everything else. When you look at a problem, you can have wins in multiple different places, right? So I do think that we've talked to a lot of truck drivers, many of which are coming to the industry because of this exciting, technology coming, some cleaner trucks to operate and to drive, and just some real excitement about the future. So
I have a son who's a sophomore in college, and he's just killed himself to get an internship. He's a mechanical engineer. And I keep telling him, look at trucking. Look at that. People talk about SpaceX or whatever, but how cool would it be to be at Nikola right now, or at Tesla Trucks, or frankly, at Schneider Trucking that's trying to figure out its next fleet, and having an engineering degree and learning about business and all that stuff. I mean, heck, you took me to two different race car teams, and it is cool to work in this space. And I think that the companies that make it cool to be driving transformation are going to have a massive opportunity in a employment crunch for sure.
Yeah. And I think we're seeing that now. I mean, with the pandemic and, constrained resources at, a lot of different companies, people are moving around, and, they're going to choose the places that are the most exciting. You said something a couple of times, and I've heard it a lot before, but what is a climate constrained world? What are the optics of that?
You mentioned a 1.5 degree pathway or a 2 degree pathway, and then people are talking about a net zero world. I think the easiest way to think about a climate strange world is a world in which you're not allowed to emit carbon, which is pretty extreme. But when you look at the climate science and you look at the kind of amount of carbon we could afford to put into the atmosphere and the rate we're putting it in today, we run out of allowable carbon pretty darn quickly. And so it's either a constraint that means I'm emitting 100 today and I got to get to 50 next year and 25 the year after and zero the year after, or I emit 100 for a couple of years and then get to zero. I encourage people to think of it as taking where you are today and reducing your carbon emissions as quickly as possible and making sure you get to zero by 2050. And if that's a boundary to your business, your operation, then that's the constraint I'm talking about, which is how do you, you know, I use this number a lot. Shell is a $130 billion organization, at least last time I looked it up. How do you grow and operate $130 billion a year when you're one of the largest emitters today and you need to get to zero sometime mid-century?
Right, right. And, you know, anything you do now will help.
This is what I think two people recognize. If you have a fleet of 10,000 trucks emitting X and you replace 1% of them now, that's 1% less emissions in perpetuity, which is, you know, a great thing. And so the more action we can do now, the better. The more delay we have, the more I look for property in Canada.
You know, for trucking, you know, it's a tough business, right? I mean, there's not a lot of profit in it, both with the fleets or with the manufacturers. There are the expectations are really high. I mean, you and I both want our coffee in the morning and our, dinner on the table at night. I mean, we're very demanding of our goods being there on time when they need to be. And now we're adding, more challenges, so to speak, to that whole supply chain. So, you know, in no way can we ignore this. And so we got to get started, but, you know, given all the challenges of the business today, where do you go first or what do you do?
Yeah, I think, and it's always dangerous to give advice because I don't know what I don't know, right? I'm not in this situation, but I think there's three ways of thinking about it and everybody gets to pick what combination I want to use. The first is generally I think I want to keep my business as it is, but I got to do it lower carbon. And that means, you know, pretty heavy investment in technology innovation and process innovation. And that's no cheap thing to do. And in your current business, it's very difficult to figure out how to pay for that. So I think you have to develop mechanisms by which your value chain values it. You can get competitive advantage from it and somehow monetize it in the marketplace or find other ways of monetizing it, like, you know, using electricity to interface with the electricity system, things like that. But that's kind of the business as usual strategy. I think that the next one is where you stay within business as usual in your industry or your value chain, but you try to identify ways within your value chain where you can take on new value added to your customers. And I don't mean really vertical integration per se, but for example, you know, maybe rather than picking things up and moving them 10,000 miles, you participate in more of smart logistics and storage and you know, managing inventories and things like that to the point where you are delivering the same value, but with a much bigger piece of the pie or something like that. And that just gives you more space to play. And then the last one would be to, and this is very difficult for the incumbents, especially big incumbents, but to look at the fringe of your entire value chain and figure out where is the change going to come from that's really going to eat my lunch and how do I get on that train? And, we saw that in automotives with the just dramatically quick change to the TNCs and to the shared network. You know, you saw that in, frankly, you're seeing that in space right now. So, I haven't found that in trucking yet. I think I see it in aviation, some other spots, but in trucking, it easily could be the shared freight world or something like that. Where
definitely we're seeing it with e-commerce and the pandemic driving even more technology and moving goods and getting it there more efficiently and quicker.
Yeah, the only thought I have as I said that all because we've had some conversation on this is. The more defensive your strategy sounds, probably the least ambitious it is, right? The first reaction is defense. How do I preserve what I have now, which leads to more incremental thinking and defensive thinking, which is actually not a terrible thing from a business perspective, but it might be a terrible thing from a climate and long-term strategy perspective.
Well, and it sure seems like, you know, maybe 5 or 10 years ago, there was a certain niche customers that were demanding. And now, as you mentioned earlier, it's investors. I mean, a lot of organizations have to report to their investors how they're handling these risks.
I'm very clear with my own personal network and people I say is like, look, we have to come to terms with the fact that we're going to have to pay for this, right? And I got to pay my fair share. I don't want to pay more than I need to, but I'm going to have to pay my fair share. And same for investors. You're not going to have a climate risk-free investment without paying for risk mitigation. And same for, frankly, politicians, although I don't understand that calculus, so I can't speak.
Well, hey, with that, because I've got a rule here that when politics comes up, we close out these podcasts. Very complicated, necessary discussions, and I appreciate you being on, Ned. Thank you very much.
Great. Thank you. I look forward to listening to the rest of the podcast.
Great efficiency with NACFI's Mike Rosenfrantz.